last night, as before we left Biloxi from the show, we stopped and got dinner in Biloxi at this, it's like this old kind of, it's called the filling station. It used to be a gas station and they turned it into a restaurant. Everything has this like weird oily taste to it, but we kind of just, we worked through it.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah. The food's actually pretty good, but we got fried pickles and it comes with fried jalapenos, right?
Of course it does.
Which, very southern thing to do, but usually you just get fried pickles by...
Pipples?
No, fried nipples. Oh. Usually you get fried pickles by themselves. It doesn't come with fried jalapenos. Anyway, it was Sarah Bryan and Dusty, both in my band, and Dusty had a couple of those jalapenos and then did something like, spicy, no more. but
he turned Italian for some reason. Yeah.
And Sarah Bryan and I both killed them, right? So this morning, before Hannah and I got on the
definitely fried nipples.
Fried nipples, jeez. My phone starts blowing up. Like, it's just like, text message, text message, text message. And when that happens, either someone's dying or there's some like really terrible thing happening, or Sarah Bryan's texting because she does like multiple texts at the same time.
Right.
And sends them. I hate that. She was talking about how she thought she was going to have to go to the emergency room because her butt was on fire to the nth degree. Like, it was the worst.
I feel like it would be her favorite thing ever if we made sure everyone knew about
that. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And, dude, she's like holding on to it. She said she called Thomas and was like, Thomas, I think I'm dying right now.
I'm concentrated evil coming out the back of me.
So she just told me she was wishing me luck and threw a prayer up for me, because my time of reckoning may be coming sooner than I expect. So. So welcome to Everything Is Okay.
Nothing like some fire poops to get a conversation going.
So y'all, you have to be careful, especially if you don't eat a lot of spicy food. If you eat a concentrated amount,
I feel like that was an anecdote we could build an entire podcast around.
Yeah, it may mess up. It may mess up your system in a real way the next day. So, the filling station in Biloxi, Mississippi, they got some serious fried jalapenos.
So what you're saying is spicy going in, spicy coming out.
Spicy going in, spicy coming out. You know, and that's...
That
you know,
should be the restaurant slogan.
Yeah, and that's why the church tells us to guard what we actually allow in. You know, God wants us to be like... You don't need to be going to all those movies and watching all those heathens on TV because you don't know what's going to come out of you after that.
Or you'll have
that.
The fiery poops.
You may have the fiery mouth and say dirty things. Oh. Or your heart may just hurt. And people would be like, what's wrong? And you're like, I was just watching TV like a sinner.
Have the fiery poops of sin.
Yeah, the fiery poops of sin. God, I love bringing it back to something that our children can take away and run with. Cheers. Cheers, James. I'm surprised we're not pastors.
So remember, everyone, fiery poops of sin.
You know, Brad's actually has... What age kids do you teach Sunday school to?
5th and 6th grade.
Yeah. Did you start... I noticed you looked down when we were talking. Were you taking notes on the fiery poop analogy and thinking about how you and Megan may be able to apply that?
Yes.
Tomorrow, yes. Actually, when you're with your kids?
Yes. Although they would probably love that.
Dude, I think they would find it so funny.
I remember when... I was in probably sophomore in high school. My math teacher, she was saying something about how she was interacting with some 5th graders or something and how she had said poop and they all laughed. And when she said poop, all of us laughed because poop doesn't stop being funny just because you're not in 5th grade anymore.
No.
But I feel like it is at its apex in 5th grade.
Yeah, that's the perfect place to just drop any bathroom humor jokes as possible. And if you can apply it to the Bible, way to go. Like, cheers to you.
I mean, you've always got the fun verse about going outside your camp to poop, so.
Deuteronomy 23, 12, and 13.
Yep. James, you just cited that.
I did.
That, you're there's real also, proud of how quick that came out.
There's also the story of Ehud, the assassin, who goes to kill the king of one of the groups that was being jerks to Israel, paraphrased. But he was a really, really fat guy. And when the assassin went and stabbed him with his sword, it went all the way into him and his fat swallowed the sword. So he ran into the bathroom to hide from the assassin. And it's really kind of a sad part of the story because the dude's like running in there to die. But it says that his attendants waited to the point of embarrassment. I just thought it was really funny. They thought he was having a long poop and that's why he died.
They waited to the point of embarrassment.
Yeah, so apparently this dude was known for his long poops.
Yeah.
And,
golly.
Long pooping allowed an assassin to get away.
I don't know who would get embarrassed by having a long poop. I certainly wouldn't.
I don't think it's about him. I think it's about his attendants who are like, you know, this is normal. I mean, we're on 15-minute mark right now.
Yeah, we'll give him a while.
Yeah, let's give him another five as he's slowly dying because this dagger is working its way into his vital organs.
And finally, one was like, I mean, let's be honest, everything has to be out of him at this point.
Yeah. Like, dude, we've been knocking on this tent flap for a long time and I haven't heard anything.
But you know, you never want to be the person who knocks on the bathroom door and says, is everything all right?
Right. Sir, we know you didn't fall in because you're grossly obese, but wanted to make sure everything's all right.
What are your thoughts, Brad?
I mean, did they not notice the blood going into the bath? Like, what would you think?
I don't know if he really bled even everywhere. Because, I mean, he stabbed him far enough that like the hilt was all the way in him. The fat closed in around it. The sword was all the way inside of the person.
I would think that would cause some bleeding.
It probably would. But think about if this is a king, right? He's probably has like multiple layers of clothing on. It's soaking up any excess blood. It's, you know, not to mention the blood has to work around his hips, which may be a problem. We don't really know what it looks like. So, I was thinking of the giant marshmallow type ghost from Ghostbusters. I feel like if he was bleeding, if this king is anything close to that, it would take a while for that stuff to hit the ground.
So today we're talking about respecting people of all body types. Right, David?
Hey, we got to start somewhere, and we started with the Marshmallow Man. So, that's not today's topic, actually. Not even a little bit, James. I think you were sticking a dagger in me.
And a dabber.
A dagger.
The little old dabber being stabbed in
you
me.
You took a dabber and placed it inside of me.
You know, as they say, a little dabber will do you.
It's true. You dabbed me with that dagger. I did not like it. Oh, my gosh. You know the difference between...
As Brad said, I don't think we can use any of this.
Yeah. I like how on a lot of podcasts, you know, you'll have really good friends that are talking together. And if somebody like misstates a word or mispronounces a word, you laugh and then the other person supports you like with love and care. James, you have never done that in the existence of me knowing you, like in the length of our friendship. It's a friendly
in
laugh.
In the length of knowing you, I don't think your self-confidence ever needed to be built up at all.
Listen,
so.
Sometimes you dabber and dagger at things, and you need to know, why is this happening? What is going on?
Sometimes words are hard.
Words are hard. Speaking of words that are difficult, oh my gosh, what's his name? Point in. That was perfect right there. I didn't even remember his name. What's the country artist that's pretty popular right now that's indie? Like he's like independent country artist. Brad, do you know his name?
I don't know. You lost me at country artist.
He's like, it's like alt country.
Red Dirt type country?
No, it's hipster country, which is a funny thing to say. It's Sturgill Simpson. Do you guys know that guy?
Nope.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
Wow. All right. Anyway, Google that later. But for the longest time, his first name is spelled Sturgill. And I'm pretty sure I said Sturgill instead of Sturgill for maybe a year. I don't think anybody corrected me ever.
Hmm. Maybe because nobody knew who he was.
Dude, he's... I feel like our listeners, the 10 people listening are probably pretty
really
informed
love,
with him.
One of my
I
favorite,
think he just won a Grammy.
One of my favorite things about David's anecdotes is the cultural significance. And just how relatable they are.
James, just because you don't know who this singer-songwriter is doesn't mean
two
it's
of the
not
three
relevant.
Of us have no idea who it is.
Y'all, when you get off this podcast, I dare you to Google it and you're like, oh my God, wow.
Wait, but do you double dog dare me?
Oh, I double dog dare you for snap. Sure. He was on the Grammys this year, like for real. And most of the people at the Grammys were like, who is this guy? Oh my God, it's not Beyonce. Y'all are those people right now. Y'all are the people that
I
loathe.
I feel like I like that you keep trying to support that people know who he is by giving more examples of people not knowing who he is.
Yeah, I'm talking about the general public, as in the general public has no idea who Pedro Lyon is, but y'all do. Right. Like, this guy is much more popular than David Bazan.
He shouldn't be. David Bazan should be the most popular.
Well, I'll agree with that. I'll get behind that for sure.
Yes.
So what are we talking about, Brad?
Yeah, you're supposed to be running this podcast. What's our topic today?
Brad's here to keep us on topic.
What's this? Is this everything is okay? Everything's okay right now, even if we don't
know
what the topic is. Brad, what are we talking about today? And do we have any updates for the people before we get into this conversation?
Updates. Well,
we've had a couple people engage us on Facebook. Thank you.
I love that you asked Brad to talk and he started to talk and you immediately cut him off as soon as he started to say something.
Brad, what were you going to say because it took too long? Try again.
Oh, I didn't really have anything, so it was fine that you you cut me off.
Then one of the reasons we put together Everything is Okay was because I think that James and I talked about it briefly, but a desire for intentional conversations about whatever with people that we care about.
This has definitely not been so far.
No, it has. I would push against that. I think it's been a wonderful conversation. It doesn't have to be serious or on point for it to be. All right, I see what you're saying, but whatever. for me personally, it's about spending quality time with people I care about. Even if we're riffing left and right about nothing, it's still good.
Fire poops and
fire poops.
Sturgill,
audible, Sturgill
things.
Yeah, mispronouncing words. You know, whatever. Anyway, we wanted to talk, I guess, today about that's called keeping the ball rolling.
anyway,
so about your stapler, we wanted to keep the conversation going so that we could dive a little bit into how maybe maintaining community or trying to be intentional about community could help with, I don't know, our day-to-day, maybe some healing in our life, feeling like we have meaning on this earth besides doing whatever we do in the day for a job or whatever, and then coming home and cooking and watching Netflix or whatever you do. Yeah, so community is important, and I think that's what we're doing right now. Wipe that smirk off your face, you bearded man.
I like that David wanted me to chime in, and you could tell because he was looking at me and then looking at the microphone and just back and forth, like eyes bouncing between the two. Like, hey, say something into that. And I just didn't, and left him looking back and forth.
Hated that for myself and for our listeners. dude, when we were playing last night, one of the things I do with Jaime, who plays keyboards, he's in lots of bands, and he's a brilliant musician, but sometimes he forgets when he's supposed to come in vocally with me. And like, for the sake of our listeners, I don't want it just to be me singing harmony. I want us to blend it so that people don't just have to hear me singing. And I do the same thing. I look at him like right before it's gonna happen, and I do the nod. I know, like, I realized that mid show, I was like, oh my God, I nod at him every time as a cue, like I'm cueing him in, like, hey, we're about to sing back up. and I need you to be there with me.
Have you started noticing that those things? Because I've been pointing out random things you do.
I think that's helped for sure.
So now you're becoming slightly self-conscious, and every time you do something repetitive, like, you're like, oh man, do I do that?
I nod every time. But it worked. I nodded
about
him
to
in.
Sing something intense, sorority girl pose now.
I bend my knees and move into the vocal part. That's what I do.
Just like a sorority girl ready to take a group picture.
Absolutely. I'll channel my inner sorority girl. I like that. I can get behind that. Dude, they get things done. They raise lots of money.
And for harmonies in your songs?
Nope. Haven't raised any money for us. You know, for like good causes like St. Jude's and stuff like that.
I liked those. You were going to give a list examples.
Nope, just one.
You said one and then was like, and I'm sure there's others.
Oh, there's, yeah. They all have a philanthropy of some sort.
Of course.
Brad, how do you feel about community right now?
How's this going for you?
How's it going for you over in Oklahoma?
One of the things I remember when you guys first, well, I guess, James, when you first moved over to Hattiesburg with David, is I remember seeing pictures of you guys doing those dinners that you do from time to time with a group of people.
Our family dinners.
Right, right. And I remember seeing that, and I remember thinking how cool that looked because there was all kinds of different people. Obviously, at the time, I didn't know anybody but James, you, and Hannah, but it just looked like a really neat thing. And at the time, we weren't actually involved in any type of group ourselves. We were kind of on our own. And so, you know, we decided to start getting involved. One of the things our church pushes is a thing called a life group. And so we got involved in one. I actually started with like a marriage series or something. And then from there, we've kind of went on. But as people have kind of gotten more comfortable with each other, because we've been able to, you know, open up more as we've gotten more comfortable. And so, you know, as a group, we've been through a lot. And it's been an amazing experience, even with the horrible things that have happened to some of the people in our group. Like, it's been an amazing experience to be able to come together and be there for one another and talk about things. And as I kind of go through this journey of, you know, what I believe in and maybe what I don't and where I'm at spiritually and things like that, being able to discuss it with them, even though they don't agree with me in a lot of aspects, some more than others, but we're able to find common ground. And I think that's the most invaluable thing. If somebody asks me like what my church experience is, that's it, more so than a Sunday morning service. So I think community is extremely important in all aspects.
And what did you call your small group for our non-church going friends?
We call it a life group.
I say that because it seems like a lot of churches will come up with different names where they're trying to create like intentional smaller communities for them to focus on different things or have dinner or whatever. And I'm not making fun of like the term life church. The thing I was thinking about when you're talking about it, and I'm sure you've had some thoughts too, was that if there's obviously some positives to having an intentional small group, and like some of my non-church going buddies would look at something like that and be like, well, we hang out with our friends, you know, semi-intentionally, and maybe we eat or whatever together and have a couple of beers and talk about life and stuff. But I think there's an extra component from an intentionality standpoint with small groups associated with a community of faith, in the sense that I feel more comfortable if something big is going on, et cetera, to talk about it with more than one person in a, you know, in an environment like that, because I know that we're there together, not only to have fun, but also to work through some of our tougher stuff, or to have people thinking and praying about whatever you're going through when you're not there. When if I go over to my buddy's house and we just hang out and, you know, grill out or whatever, we may or may not talking about something serious, but I feel it just feels easier, I guess, in a church group setting per se, to kind of open up as a dude.
Yeah. And I mean, specifically for men, it's really difficult because, you know, we're taught don't have emotion. You have to be self-sustaining and have everything done on your own, essentially, which is the difficulty of both American culture and the church is personal responsibility for everything in the church. Everything's personal, you know, your individual relationship with Christ. You have to have your quiet time of reading the Bible so much a day and that sort of thing, which, I mean, that's new. The general idea that people would be literate and even potentially have scripture is really new. When all of the Bible was written, it was either oral traditions or people showed up at a church building and somebody got up and read a few chapters. Like, that's just the way it worked. It's supposed to be communal, and we've moved away from that. I mean, for all of human history, the way we were designed or evolved or whatever your view in any of that, all of it lends towards this idea that we are supposed to be together. Like, if you look at all of our behaviors, all of it leans towards wanting to be a part of a group. And a lot of our emotional struggles tends to be from feeling like we aren't accepted by a group, and having a group, like a small group in whatever, whether it's religious or not, just an intentional group of people that you find acceptance in is huge. Because if not, we end up trying to fit into all these different groups and end up with, you know, yelling at each other on Facebook or whatever. You just end up with a life of acquaintances. And loneliness is a big killer in this country. Pharmaceuticals, there's lots of things that are sold to us to try to make up for the fact that we're alone, like, and the toll that that takes on us physically and emotionally. So it's really important to find those people for your health and your stability, as well as, you know, happiness, and essentially everything that we have as a goal in life is aided by having community.
Yeah. And if you have, obviously, if you have depression or mental health issues, community can definitely help with that. It's not going to take the place of if you need treatment, in my opinion, but it's absolutely a good thing to contribute
to. Right. I'm not saying it will do away with it necessarily, but I mean,
James, we already know that you're pushing this anti-drug.
There's a reason.
Propaganda over here.
Yeah.
Get rid of those pills.
Says the drug salesman. So we get that for a living, you push drugs. Anyways.
That had nothing to do with why I said that.
Still the case. But the more this idea of, like, the American dream of being individualistic and not needing anybody has grown, and the idea of everything being individualistic in church as well, there's a reason that as those two things have grown and been deeper and being instilled in us, the higher the need for those medicines have been, like the more cases of depression and everything. So it's not saying that it's going to necessarily do away with the need for anyone to ever be, you know, medically helped with depression, but
or do like a lot of issues, therapy or whatever. But obviously having intentional relationship and having a community is going to have a positive benefit,
right,
on your existence in this life. So for sure, absolutely. And social isolation is, I feel like it sneaks up on us when we least expect it. Like when you move to, if you move to a new community, et cetera, and let's say you're single, or even if you move with your family, it can be super difficult to break into whatever town that is, to break into a community, to find a church that you feel like you can fit into, or even if you aren't going to church, to just find new folks to hang out with.
Right.
And I'd even argue church has the potential to be a huge helping factor in building new relationships.
It does. It helps having a building full of people who have a obligation to be nice to you.
Oh my God.
You know, like as a starting point, you know what I mean? Like, because as a starting point, the most difficult thing is figuring out how to even start conversation with people so you can find people that you like enough to want to be around. And I mean, lots of the idea of church is you have to be nice to people, right? And so like more people are, it creates this atmosphere where it's easier to have some random thing to talk to somebody about without the initial judgment, you know. There's the idea of being social in it.
Well, I think for me the reason why having a community that is based around a church of some point is that you have a starting point of something you have in common that you can start at. The thing I love the most about, I listened to a podcast of Rob Bell, and he was going on about the political climate and things of that nature. And he gets to talking about how if you can start at a place, if you can start where you agree and then branch from there, then your conversation's much more constructive. But if you're starting at a place of where we disagree and then trying to find areas to reconcile, then it's just going to be bashing your head against the wall for a long period of time. And so you always, if you can start with where you agree, you can have a starting point and you can always go back to where you agree. So that's what I think with the church. I mean, because I've been to some churches where they're total jerks and yeah. I want to never go back. And I wouldn't want to be involved in their community. But I've also been to churches where, as far as the doctrine that was being presented, I didn't necessarily agree. But them and the way they presented and the love that they presented was absolutely compelling and would make me want to get to know those people more and more and more.
Yeah, my friend the other day actually was talking about how she appreciates, she doesn't go to church, but she appreciates churches that explicitly say that like everyone's welcome. Because in her mind, the only reason they would say that would be if they're actively fighting the stereotype that church is not for everyone. I think that's really cool. I thought that was a good thing to think about from is this a community where you would be allowed to come and explore your faith?
Right. It feels like there's just this baseline that everybody would assume that people would be welcome at churches, but there's, you know, our pastor has talked a plethora of times of there's people who are of different sexual orientations or who've gone through divorce or for just quite a few different reasons who've actually come to him and basically asked if they're allowed to even be there because there's a lot of churches who kick people out for
various, yeah, or if you're a Democrat.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's a lot of the time when for a lot of people, when the worst thing that's happened to them in their life happens, they get kicked out of their community for it. And that's something that's happened way too often in church. And it's beyond just, I feel like damaging isn't a strong enough word for what happens to people.
Because why would you go back to church? You know, if when you have your worst experience in your life or you make the most obvious sin or mistake that everybody finds out about, like infidelity, for example, or something like that.
It's when your safety net becomes the weapon against you. That's pretty rough.
Yeah. And it's not like we're condoning a said sin or whatever that you've done. Like, you cannot agree with something that somebody did and still support them fervently.
Right.
You know, like, I'm not excited that you cheated on your wife at all, actually. Right. But I understand that this has just destroyed both of y'all's lives or your children's lives, et cetera.
Yeah. And I mean, in those times, what ends up being more beneficial in trying to get somebody to the point of wanting to, like, I don't know, move away from whatever difficulty that was or whatever you view as terrible that they did? What's a better way to be able to speak to that in their life? Kick them out of all of their social groups, or to actually love them and care for them and, you know, stand by them when there's power when somebody knows that you think they're wrong but you stand with them. The camaraderie that's built there, the ability that you have to then speak into their lives and talk about why you feel like that was wrong or whatever, from a place of not rejection but of love, there's tons of benefit from that.
So let's unpack that a little bit more. What do you guys think is kind of, we all can agree that probably there is something that happens within, you know, the church community where it becomes a exclusivity atmosphere of behavior-based, you know, activity where if you are able to check off these check marks, then you're good to be in our community. And you know, I know we've all probably been around a church that did that. Not necessarily the one we were growing up in. That's not what I'm implying. I'm just saying, you know, what do you think contributes to that? Is it something where there's a lot of emphasis on the keeping the law versus Jesus saying something to the effect of, you know, I've come to set you free, not necessarily from doing whatever you want, because I've had that thrown back at me as, what are you saying that people can do whatever they want? And that's never what I'm saying. But being able to say Jesus was there to set that person free of the personal hell that comes along with possibly screwing up. Because people put themselves through enough hell, they don't need other people to put them through hell as well. So where do you think that comes from within a church where people don't feel welcome?
Yeah, I think it's a very natural human tendency to group yourself, to self-regulate yourself, to say, hey, if you have this, this, and this, or you act this, this, this way, you're part of the in group. And if you don't, you're part of the out group. Like, it's a super natural human thing to do. And to look around and be like, what's our common bond? Well, we follow this God, we believe in Jesus, and we try to act Christ-like, which looks like this, this, and this. And I think over the years, the easiest way to kind of regulate that, the lazy way to regulate that, is to be like, okay, well, these are the most common offenses in the mind of our, you know, in the human existence or in our culture. Like, we say, this is a serious sin, so don't do this one. Don't curse, because, you know, people that don't have God, they curse all the time. You know, it's the what's obvious, right? But we don't look at the internal sin that's not obvious at all, from like pride, you know, or lust, or the things that we can hide. It's not as easy to judge somebody on those because they're hidden. And so we find what's easy to judge on. And then we say, okay, you've made it. You're in this group unless you do this, this, or this. And then we're going to look at that and be like, oh, I don't know if you can be in this group anymore because you look too much like the other side of the group.
Right. I mean, if you look at human history, you have to figure out how to have the approval and position in your group. Like, that's just the way it works. That's survival. Because if you aren't part of a group, you die. That's just the way human history has been. And so that's the structure that we've kind of worked through. Everything that people do is we have to establish the rules and find out who's in and who's out. We have to build our tribe. And as far as the church goes, you know, as far as the Old Testament goes, we were given a list of rules. And so lots of the faith was built on following these rules. And then there's Jesus came, and when he, you know, said, I didn't come to do away with the law, I came to complete it. And if you look at the way he interacted with people, it was really this shift of not follow these rules and you're in, but follow me and you're in. That's what it was. Didn't matter where your starting point was or where you were in that journey. It was moving towards Jesus. Like, that's the point.
It's hard to measure that, right?
It is, but that's the thing. We're not supposed to measure that. That's not on us.
But how do we know who's in and who's out?
Right. That's kind of the idea is, yeah, you know, we have to establish this, and that's not the way it's supposed to work.
Do you think maybe that's part of it, of the, you know, we don't view it necessarily as a journey? We kind of view it as a, you pray a prayer, you're saved, and then now you're supposed to be this radically changed person. Do you think that,
right,
do you think that contributes to a lot of that? And that we don't ever look at it as a journey and don't ever see the human side of somebody and say, oh, wait, so he prayed this prayer, he accepted Jesus, but oh, wait, he's still been a drug addict for many years before this. Most likely that's going to still be pulling at him, right? So you think it's something of that nature, or do we just love categories too much?
Well, I think the not looking at the journey is, it's hard to appreciate the journey, period, at least for me in life.
Right.
So it's, so much is based on getting to the finish line. Like, what, why am I doing this? Well, we are brought up to think, oh, well, we want to get it. We want to get fire insurance, right? Like, we want, right, to get to heaven, when our transformation is supposed to happen on this earth. Like, it's, right, definitely supposed to start here and continue on. It's dying to our natural tendencies of wanting to win, of wanting to gather wealth and success and be esteemed by our peers, and instead lowering ourselves and serving other people, which is not fun or easy all the time, or most of the time. It's kind of a pain, actually, if you ask me. And there's a sacrifice element to it. And there's not a lot of glory at all in, right, in being Christ-like.
This, you know, deciding who's in and out viewpoint is a necessity when you have the eschatology of this heaven and hell mindset, that we live towards the afterlife.
What does eschatology mean for just our non-church going obsessed biblical people?
Your view of end times kind of thing, like after death kind of view. And so when you believe in the idea of we live towards heaven and hell, and being here is just to get as many people as possible to pray this prayer to keep them out of hell and put them in heaven, I mean, when that's your mindset of the goal, it's literally the purpose of our faith is to decide who's in and who's out. That's the whole point, if that's your belief. And so when it's not a Christ-centered kingdom on earth viewpoint and everything's for later, it's all about defining who's in and out.
And I think the mindset of many people in my life growing up, and my mindset for a long time, was that's it. That's being, right, evangelical. That's going out and spreading the gospel so we get as many people from the fire of hell.
Right.
So why would I not want to do that? And the tough answer to that is maybe we've read the Bible wrong. Like, maybe that isn't our end goal. Maybe our end goal is not to get people to say the sinner's prayer. Maybe our end goal is to try to be a light of what Christ did on this earth in order to contribute to those around us and to benefit them as much as we can in our day to day.
Yeah. It's difficult because I love the tradition that we grew up in. There's so many benefits of it and so many good things, but the views of heaven and hell that we held when we were younger, at least, and are commonly taught in the church, didn't come around for a long time after Jesus.
What?
And the current belief system is actually really new. And so, yeah, it's been this way for a few generations, but I mean, it's so new. Jesus didn't teach any of the things that
But that, what about the saying. Story about the rich guy who wanted a drink of water?
Yeah, that's a good question.
What was that about?
It'd be something that, you know, takes a lot of actually looking into what Jesus would have been talking about and like what the point is. We, like, you know, I was taught that the Bible was infallible and the Bible was all literal, and, you know, so all these stories had to happen. And right. So instead of being all about trying to help our understanding of God and to show us who God was, it was 50% helping our view of God and showing who God was, and 50% literal. And so if you can't reconcile your view of God with it being literal, you have to change it. And so, you know, it's the difficulty of, you know, the creation story and Noah and all these things where
new God creation
seems pretty intense and, you know, goes against science and various things like that, and seems like a very murderous, terrible God. But that's not the way that works at all. And it's trying to look at all of it in our current context, or this context of, well, it all has to be pointing towards us going to heaven and not hell, when that absolutely was not something that the Jews even thought was possible. That's not part of the conversation. That's not the point. Nothing.
Boom.
So because I can already hear this question being thrown at me, if I was to basically make that statement, what would be the point then?
Of those stories?
Sure. If the point isn't to have someone pray a prayer to go to heaven to save them from hell, what is the point?
I think one of the points for me is having something that's been around forever that actually wants to have a relationship with me to rely on, to trust in, and know that if I follow what he represented when he was on earth, that I will find peace and I will experience joy in a way that I would not if I didn't do that. Because there's nothing on this earth, and I've learned this again and again and again, and I'll continue to learn this, that's going to bring me happiness and joy and contentment. That's not a wife. It's not a job. It's not money or a family or any of that. Like, connecting with God is the ultimate thing that we're reaching for. And by actively having a relationship through acting like him on this earth, I'm getting closer to that goal on this earth. And I think that that's part of the process of transforming into someone who's Christ-like. So when I do die, and when we go on to existence with him in the next life, I think that that process of transformation is going to be less difficult the more I'm living for him and the less I'm living for myself. And that's why I think that we have those stories about dying to yourself, dying to the riches of this earth, because we can't bring it with us. And I think that's a really tough transition when if you've spent your entire existence living for yourself and building your kingdom, quote unquote, on this earth, leaving that and living for someone else completely is going to be a really hard transition in the next life.
And I mean, this idea of wanting to reconcile humanity with God in the afterlife, I feel like there's a lot of reconciliation that's will happen. And I'm not saying I don't believe in an afterlife or anything like that, but I think that's short-sighted to view Jesus as something that only cares about heaven and what's going to happen to you after you die. From continually how he treated people and how he kept talking about having a kingdom and, you know, building it on earth as it is in heaven. And this mindset of reconciling humanity to God here. So it's not about finding out who on earth you can discard to make sure you make it into heaven. It's more about trying to build more of a heaven on earth. So humanity was in a pretty dark place for a long time, like, you know, with all the wars and everything. Like, we've continually just killed each other to try to take the same scraps.
We're still doing it.
That's just the way it's always worked.
Yeah.
And if you look at human history, I mean, it was, you can go fight people and take everything they have, and then you enslave them and beat them and murder them at your will, and you can rape them all you want and that sort of thing, because you won. Like, that's just the way it works. And the gods of these different people were sort of defined by their power and how they would help you to murder these people and to defeat them and to crush them and to build, help you build an empire. And if you look at the Old Testament, people are slow to change. And so there's this movement from that. And a lot of the stories that people look at as being just horrific, you can see mythologies that predate the Bible who have very similar stories, except the God is a major jerk the whole way through, where there's a lot of similarities in stories that are in the Bible, but there's aspects of love and grace and a redefining of who God is through these stories.
And God's chasing after his people.
Right.
Which is,
it's pursuit and love.
Which seems unprecedented.
Right.
In my limited understanding of all the different
right
mythos or whatever.
Right.
So history.
It's you can see God's attempt to change culture. And okay, you have slaves from conquering this place. Treat them well. And that's move towards don't have slaves. But you can't just tell people don't have slaves and expect their culture to not collapse when that's the entire culture. Like, that's just the way it works. You know, ways of beating people, killing people, your rules, the idea of eye for an eye seems pretty aggressive and mean. But that's before God said eye for an eye. It was if somebody pokes out your eye, you murder their family. So even eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, is more peaceful than what was currently happening. And then you can see further down the line when Jesus addresses it, no, it says turn the other cheek. Like he moves away from even returning any violence. And so you can see these steps of the idea of how we are supposed to be moving away from violence and God trying to shift culture away from it.
I love how Mike put that a few weeks ago, listening to his podcast, or the Ecclesia podcast, but I loved how he put the whole point of turning the other cheek wasn't, because a lot of people look at that as a passive thing. You know, you've got an aggressor who wants to hit you, and you just don't want to hit them back, so you turn the other cheek, and you're just being a wuss. But I love how he put, no, you know, in that day, the way they would hit you was with, you know, it would be in a backhand at first. And so you turn the other cheek to essentially tell them, if you're going to do this to me, you're going to basically, you know, you're going to treat me like a human. You know, you're going to give me dignity when you hit me, type of thing. And I thought that was really cool. And I just think when we get back to kind of community aspects, I just believe that every time you see Jesus talking to anybody, he's trying to take something that is putting them through a hell of some sort and bringing them life through it. Now, I trust that by him saying, I come to bring you eternal life, I do trust in an afterlife. What that is, I don't know, but I think it's beautiful to not know and not try to be so smug that you know 100% and you can't accept any other explanation. But I think every time you would see it, he was trying to save them from, you know, going through a lot of just hells on earth. And so whether that means there's a physical hell or there's not, I don't know. But I can see where Jesus just kept coming and kept being like, hey, you don't have to live like that. You don't have to constantly be in hell. So
yeah, I mean, I think there's hope in that. There's a lot of hope in that. And that's that hope piece is something that we can take for granted and forget in our darkest times. And we have been in, the three of us have all had different points of, you know, pretty intense lows where hope seemed non-existent. And that's, again, building community and reaching out to a God that we can believe in. It has the power, absolutely the power, to give us hope in the darkest times and to give us strength that we don't personally have. And I would even argue that God breaks us at different points so that we know that we don't have the strength to do it on this earth. Because I'm way too prideful to say without being broken that I don't have the strength to do it on my own.
Right. And I guess sort of my...
And that's why we spank our children.
Right.
Just kidding. we're gonna get emails about that.
Right. I guess essentially my way of kind of tying it all together would be saying that if you... Jesus was all about breaking down separations to build community. He went and sought out people who were unclean, people who were separated culturally, all the people on the outskirts, all the people who weren't included, tax collectors, lepers, prostitutes, Samaritans, all the groups that the in crowd either didn't want to interact with or felt like they were bad for potentially justifiable reasons to not have community with them. And Jesus sought out community with all of those people. The example of Jesus is building community with people that everyone else has tried to ostracize for whatever reason. And so if your pursuit of Jesus and trying to live like Jesus leads you to build walls between you and other people instead of like making bridges of community, then definitely re-examine some of that. Because I get not everybody's going to be able to interact with all people. There's some people that there'll be, you know, some things that you just can't handle interacting with. Like I'm well aware that people who abuse children, it's not a good idea for me to be around them for my own shortcomings of I'm pretty nonviolent, but that's one of those things that pushes me towards wanting to be violent. So it's not a good idea for me to be around that because I can't handle it, not because they don't have value.
The other thing that I've noticed too with Jesus' example is that although he reached out to these ostracized groups, he had a tight-knit group of folks that he spent the most time with. And I think I'm going to go ahead and assume that he got sustenance and support not only with his prayer and communication with his heavenly Father, but also through having a group of folks that he spent a lot of time with teaching and spending time hanging out with. And I think, like, when I look at small groups in our lives, like, those have the potential to emulate that as well. Because he definitely didn't hang out with everybody. He didn't have enough time, you know, and he had to pick that intentionally. And I think that was all part of him showing example of what we're supposed to do as well. But I love that he had his group of people that he hung out with and that were, you know, his tight-knit community.
Right. I mean, you definitely need that uplifting foundation of people, but you still spend a lot of time with other people. And it's not saying don't be good friends with people who you disagree with them or lifestyle or whatever, but it's important to have a foundation of people that will help keep you healthy.
And that's what I kind of see the disciples as a little bit. And I'm sure that they were a support system for each other. A really, really tough existence of following somebody who was considered a nuisance to society, you know?
Right. I don't think just considered. I think he would have even been willing to claim he was a bit of a nuisance to society. I don't think he would have denied that at all.
How would you summarize, what would you find to be the most important part of what we were talking about?
thought the fire poops part was pretty
important. Yeah, the beginning of the podcast was important.
So you know
we need to watch what spicy, goes into our
spicy
body.
Spicy in, spicy out.
Health is a real thing. We need to take care of ourselves.
Fire nipples.
Drop the cigarettes. You know, if you're drinking too much, let's tone it down a little bit. If you're eating out often, that stuff's gross. That stuff's really not good for you. It's just
I'll
not.
Push back against that. I love fast food.
I know you do. I love you, Taco Bell. Good for you.
I love you, Taco Bell.
I love you, Taco Bell. Pretz. All right, we'll be serious. Fine, James, make some summary about relationships.
That's not what the face was. The face was, you just need to watch any of those things about fast food. Any documentary about fast food
will
change your mind.
Everywhere.
You will just be like, I can't touch this. And then you still will when it's late at night and you need something
to
eat.
See, people say that kind of thing, and then they'll be like, you know how many bugs are in that and how many this, and that's not real
meat.
That's
not even what I'm talking about.
I get that. But I'm just saying, like, the list of things of, like, these things were treated inhumanely, and this thing was... you know, whatever this meat was, or not real meat, or whatever, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that looks good. I want to go to Taco Bell.
See, here's the thing. Having now been going to a lot of these places, and, you know, we do their wastewater, and knowing what exactly goes into some of that stuff, if once you know that, you won't want to eat it.
You say that, but... I love bar-ass hot dogs because I remember years ago I saw it and it had like 5 different animals listed of the byproducts that were in it. And I was like, I can have 5 animals in one bite? Heck yeah. And I see those hot dogs as recycling.
I think I'm going to throw up.
I'm totally fine with that. I mean, of course, anyway. I'm the person who's totally fine with eating a possum and all those other things. So,
and we eat shellfish. Which are bottom dwellers, which is pretty gross.
Yeah.
So,
they just eat poop. And why do we do this to ourselves? The Jews had a lot of things right, and that was one of them.
They didn't have Taco Bell, though. boy.
Oh, man. This has been a good convo, Brad. I feel like people get it. Relationships are important. We need to make time for it. It's inconvenient often, but it doesn't matter. We still need to make it work. Facebook is not going to supplement that. Blah, blah, blah. That's what we got. Peace out, y'all.
I'm Brad Stair.
I'm David Meggs.
I'm James Eisenhower.
Everything's okay, people. When you fall. I can't use any of that.